Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Now through August 2nd, New York Stage and Film and Vassar College's Powerhouse Theater presents The Light Years, a new play by award-winning playmaking company, The Debate Society. Spanning 40 years and set at the Chicago World's Fair, The Light Years has been developed over several years through the unique collaboration process of The Debate Society members, writer-performer Hannah Boss, writer-performer Paul Thurene, and director-developer Oliver Butler. Oliver Butler's other recent directing credits include Will Eno's The Open House at the Signature Theatre Company, for which he won an Obie Award for direction, the New York City Center Encore's off-center production of Jonathan Larson's Tick, Tick, Boom, starring Lin-Manuel Miranda, Leslie Odom Jr., and Karen Olivo, and the world premiere of Daniel Goldfarb's Legacy at the Williamstown Theatre Festival, which was part of their summer season and performed on the Nico stage mere days ago. Oliver Butler, welcome back to the Roundtable.
Thank you so much.
Tell us a little bit what you are willing to share to reveal about the story of The Light Years.
Well, The Light Years is a play that Hannah Boss, Paul Thurene, and I have been working on for the last 6 years. It is a play that takes place at the 1893 and 1933 World's Fairs in Chicago and is heavily inspired by the real-life theater impresario Steele Mackay, who was a humongous theater mind in the late 1800s. He invented folding theater seats, he invented modern fire code, invented the playbill, was the first American to play Hamlet in London, built some of the first electrified theaters in America, and was commissioned to design and build the largest theater of all time, a 12,000-seat theater, at the 1893 World's Fair to stage a near life-size recreation of Columbus's discovery of America, including three ships sailing in off of Lake Michigan into the theater. We became obsessed with him because his story, I'm going to give too much away, but he was an amazing story of hope and failure, and our company tends to specialize in grand, amazing disappointment and failure as a sort of ongoing theme. And so we focused our story, while Steele is talked about and does make an appearance in the play, we focused on our invented idea of his chief electrician, young, aspiring engineer who is commissioned to wire an electrical night sky over the audience. To look exactly like the sky that Columbus would have seen when he discovered America and made his voyage. So the story ends up focusing in on him, his relationship to his wife, and then the story also jumps 40 years in the same house, 40 years later at the 1933 fair, and all of the sort of hope, excitement, and loss of a different family, a husband who is a jingle writer at the 1933 fair, and his wife who... they're both trying to make a go of it at that fair. So in a lot of ways, like, it's a story about the workers and the makers, where you've got the sort of the grand visionaries that the stories are normally about. Hannah, Paul, and I ended up becoming very focused and interested in the stories of the people who actually do the work, the wiring, and the hard labor, and in a lot of ways, as a part of like the great machine of industry and hope, sometimes get sort of buried or rolled over by the hugeness of other people's visions.
You mentioned that the show has been in development for about 6 years, including in part at Sundance Institute Theater Labs and New York Stage and Film. How do you and Hannah and Paul work together to create the show? What happens within those 6 years? And I know that you also leave and work on other things during the time. It's not like for every day for 6 years you've been working on this show. But that's as right. You develop a piece, the active parts of that development, what do those entail?
Well, Hannah, Paul, and I, we collaborate to make these pieces. And Hannah and Paul are the playwrights, and I'm a director. But the three of us create the world of the play collectively. And what that looks like is, before we know what the narrative of the piece is, before we even know what the characters are, we go and we research and assign things to each other to try and build out the world of a play. It's sort of like three people who approach a process before there's anything, assuming that there is a play between us that is going to be a reflection of our particular tastes at the moment, who we are as individuals, our souls, just the things that we're interested in. And we slowly tease those things out until there's enough of a world to start discerning some sort of a narrative. And it's only later in the process, throughout all of that, Hannah and Paul are writing, and I'm doing directorial research, and sometimes we're working with designers to create a set for a script that might not exist. But at a certain point, when we've reached a threshold of detail, we then start discerning what the narrative is. And that's the point at which Hannah and Paul split off and start organizing and writing a draft script. Later in the process, it looks much more conventional in that, you know, I'm directing and Hannah and Paul are acting, and, you know, we're sort of performing more sort of fundamental roles in a conventional process. But a lot of it has to do with sort of this, I guess one part of the secret sauce has to do with we found ways to make progress in the absence of knowing where we're going. So, you know, we're all sort of sitting in a dark room and we can sort of like smell and feel the play around us. And we do things to try and sort of etch out and turn lights on and see more and more of it without thinking product-based and that we've got to sort of like reach a certain goal. Now, we are dramaturgically rigorous, so at the point that we start seeing more and more of who the characters are and what the play is, we, you know, continually, you know, they write and they write and they edit, and I work sort of as someone who's giving feedback on the work, and we stage things and we bring actors in and we will do works. We've done so many workshops at this play to try and see more and more what this play looks like as it emerges from the dark around us.
When you direct a Debate Society play, how is that different from when you work on a different play developed by a different playwright? For instance, you just a few weeks ago directed Legacy at the Williamstown Theater Festival. How do you have to approach those shows differently?
Absolutely. Although I will say that I think that there's just as much difference between the way you approach like two different scripted works versus, you know, as there is between working in our format and working with a scripted work. I sort of think every process and every writer that you work with or every creator or ensemble, you have to sort of get a sense of how that wants to work and mold yourself somewhat to sort of how they want to work. So for instance, with Daniel was a very sort of collaborative and generous artist and writer, as most writers who you work with are. And, you know, while I wasn't there actually birthing the idea, and what I was handed was a more finished script by the time I got it, my role ends up being honestly sort of very similar. I just have to do a lot of the work I would normally do with Hannah and Paul over the course of a few years, getting more and more intimate with the world of the play by actually creating it. I need to do then in anticipation of the rehearsals with Daniel. So again, by immersing yourself in the world, doing a lot of research, talking to a lot of people, get yourself up to speed so you're actually thinking and acting and directing on par with the other mind in the room. I do have to say, though, that I didn't go to graduate school, and I feel like Hannah, Paul, and I think Hannah did go to graduate school, Paul didn't, but I think we all think of our work with the Debate Society as our master's degree in theater, in that it was through working with them and the process of working with them that allowed me to figure out exactly what I like in the theater and how I want to make work. So I do have to say that when I work in a more conventional process, which a lot of times is much shorter once you're in the room with the actors, I try and retain that feeling of allowing us to not know answers for as long as is reasonably possible. Because I have this belief that the longer you allow yourself to make progress, it's not an inactive thing, but the longer you can allow yourself to not know an answer but actively move forward, the richer the world, the acting, the design can become. But you actually have to make a concerted decision to not force yourself to nail things down immediately and allow things to grow organically. So I try and find ways in those processes, in a number of ways, with conversations with the writer, conversations with the actors, to allow that unknowing to foster and grow.
And when you say unknowing, when you say not knowing the answers, do you mean within the world of the work, the characters don't know the answer or where they're going, or for the process and for the performance, all of the actors and you don't know what is the right choice on stage?
It's eventually you should know most of the right choices on stage. Like an actor should know why they're doing most of what they're doing, although sometimes not all. I think that some artists like to, you know, if you think of the theater as like a more mechanical or less of an art and more of, you know, like a skill that you use, which it isn't, you know, you can imagine a world where you think, well, if I know everything, or at least I know how to describe what I'm doing, then it will be better. And I guess I do try and fuse, even in a finished product, a little bit of the mystery of the unknowing in the performance, that the actors don't necessarily need to defend every single beat and every choice that they make, that we're holding up their artistic decisions to some sort of ability to defend with thesis, mm-hmm. the choices that they're making. So yes, I want that spirit of mystery and unknowing to be sort of in the mood of the work. But what I think what I'm primarily talking about is there is a period of time, and you have to decide how long that period is, where you allow a kind of, you know, I don't know why, but I feel like this is right. And what that allows is the ability for the most delicate ideas, sometimes the most ethereal and powerful things, that if they were held up to the criticism of, you know, whether it actually fits into a preconceived notion of what the play needs to be, they would wither and die. It allows those most delicate ideas to live longer and potentially grow into something that can stand on their own. So it's a philosophical difference in the way that we work that isn't allowing everyone to like not make decisions. It's allowing more of the sort of delicate choices, the things that don't have to be defended intellectually, to grow until they can potentially be the most sort of strong and detailed and interesting parts of performances. And that comes through in design, that comes through in performance. It's a philosophical difference that plays out in the final product, but is also just a part of a process.
What do you do, what do you have to do, personally and as a professional, to flip the switch from one project to another? As I mentioned, you very recently put up a piece at Williamstown, and now you're at Vassar College doing a powerhouse show with New York Stage and Film. What do you have to do to change over? Like, do you get to take a day off, or do you just keep rolling and maybe working on both simultaneously even?
Yeah, well, you definitely have to work on stuff at the same time. Doing what I did going from Williamstown to New York Stage and Film is not at all the ideal, because we actually started rehearsals 3 days before I finished at Williamstown.
Mm-hmm.
So I had an associate director who I spent the last 2 months prepping with Hannah and Paul so that he could lead the rehearsals for those first 3 days. My associate, Hunter Bird, real name. Yet you do need to reset. And actually, this is something I'm struggling with now, is sort of like how to, because I'm now working at the level and the capacity that I want to be working. I have the amount of projects that is keeping me actually busy, paid, and fulfilled.
Sure. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. When I got here, basically the day after our opening at Williamstown, for my fourth day of rehearsal, having missed the first three, it did take a few days to transition over. In this, I would not recommend it. In this situation, though, I have Hannah and Paul, who are my close collaborators, in addition to the associate. You know, Hannah and Paul really sort of helm the ship. And the three of us have learned how to sort of do that particular thing. Now, as far as resetting, I exercise as much as possible. I feel like that ends up having a lot to do with, you know, an ability to reset creatively. And I like to try and spend as much time outside as possible. And then in the end, you really do need a day clear, a day off, a week off. You need to sort of just have some quiet time to let one project subside and let the other one sort of take root. Also, I'll say, what's particularly hard for a director is when a show opens, you become obsolete. You know, you're not paid to stay any longer, and usually they don't even give you housing after the opening. I mean, you know, they don't coldly shuttle you out, but you're expected to go.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this thing that you put all this effort into, and you pour it into, and then you sort of are shown the door, and that's how it works. But you go through a certain amount of, you have to sort of like get over the loss of the project. And then doing that while also starting something new, it's sort of like going to a funeral and then immediately going to a birth.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a challenge. I don't know how to do it well yet, but you just sort of keep going.
Last summer, I went to the city and saw Tick, Tick, Boom at New York City Center Off-Center production that you directed, starring Lin-Manuel Miranda and Leslie Odom Jr. And I just basically want to tell you that it was fantastic and I loved it.
Oh, thank you. That was such an incredible privilege to work on that show with that cast. And Karen Olivo as well.
Of course.
And it was just, thank you so much. That means a lot to me. I loved working on that.
You learn who directors are in my personal job. You start to learn who people are and then line them up with what they've done. You know, I only really knew of Blood Play because that was what we had talked about before. And then I went down and hadn't looked into it very much, just bought tickets, said, this is going to be great, bought tickets, went down and said, oh my gosh, Oliver Butler's directing this. It couldn't be more different from Blood Play, except that they're both taking place on stage.
That's right. It was an absolute dream. And I have to say, I've only done a few musical projects before that, usually smaller and, you know, much weirder.
Mm-hmm.
And working with superstars on a project written by a legend and seeing the audiences, you know, basically like, I mean, people are so crazy into musicals. I mean, they like cry, their tears fly horizontal from their face.
Yeah.
And they sort of like scream and die. And I have to say, after that, I was like, I don't think I'll ever work on a play that will do that to people. I'll keep working on plays, but you see people have these like near death experiences in the musical theater, and you're like, I don't know how I'll ever elicit that kind of response. It's hard to get over.
Oliver Butler directs the Debate Society's The Light Years for its production at New York Stage and Film and Vassar College's Powerhouse Theater. The show runs in Poughkeepsie through August 2nd. For more information, visit powerhouse.vassar.edu. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.